Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We come to you live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, bringing you the latest news, insights, analysis, previews, recaps, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader, who today has a very important announcement to make starting the show right now. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I'm so excited. We tonight are announcing our fantastic winter golf giveaway for December. Back 9 Report is partnered with Let's Golf Travel to offer one of our lucky listeners a winter golf getaway to Gulf Shores, Alabama. This trip is for your favorite foursome and includes 3 days, 2 nights in a beachfront condo provided by Kaiser Realty, a Wyndham resort, plus we throw in 3 18-hole rounds for your entire foursome of golf, 2 rounds at Kraft Farms and 1 round at Peninsula Golf and Racquet Club. You got white sandy beaches, you got 54 holes of golf, and you got warm, sunny Gulf Shores, Alabama weather. What could be better, Carlos? Simply visit www.letsgolf.com. Click on the newsletter, sign up. Don't delay. Sign up today. Really excited about it, Carlos.
The only thing better would be, you know, it's a foursome. So Fred Alvader and I are available. So if you want to invite us, we can go. You know, it's just your option. But anyway, it's
I'm in. I love Gulf Shores. Love Gulf Shores, Carlos. Beautiful place.
We can sign up if you want, both of us. You know, you just have to make one more. That's it, and we'll do the foursome for you. But anyway, let's start this amazing. Don't delay. Just go right now and do it. Hey, let's start right away like we all usually do with our weekend backspin. And I'm going to start talking about the European Tour. And I have to tell you, Fred, Charles Schwab, so he was just too good this weekend. He won his 4th Alfred Dunhill Championship with a 4-shot win in the event at Leopard Creek overnight. The South African, he began the final round with a 3-shot advantage over the pack, but he started nervously with a drop shot at the 3rd hole. At that stage, Gregory Bordy and Benjamin Abird were within 2 shots, but a birdie at the 6th for Schwartzel was canceled by another drop shot at the 8th, and as the leaders faced a turn, the tournament was still wide open, but Schwartzel, he closed the door on the run for home with birdies at 11th, 13th, and 14th holes. The field just couldn't respond, and Schwartzel was champion once again. Schwartzel, who showed he was ready for the task, with an impressive 4th place at the season-ending DP World Tour Championship, he led from wire to wire to record not only his 4th victory in this event, but his 10th European Tour victory. 7 of those have come in his homeland. He finished clear of a trio of Frenchmen at Leopard Creek. Gregory Bordy was the runner-up with Benjamin Abird and Sebastian Groh. They were in 3rd and 4th places, respectively. One note there, Jason Scribner, who was fresh from regaining his European Tour status via Tour School, he finished 27th, Fred.
Hey, Carlos. They also played a little bit of golf down in Australia last weekend. Jordan Spieth was sighted in the field. Did you see the video on Facebook of 6-year-old Matt Jones meeting Greg Norman?
Yeah.
Been about 30 years ago because now Jones is 35 years old. He survived an up-and-down day. He took the 54-hole lead in on Sunday, but he did hold off world number 1, Jordan Spieth, and number 10, Adam Scott, to grab his 2nd world title. He's also a former winner on the PGA Tour. He won the 2014 Shell Houston Open. Spieth, who started off his fantastic 12 months of golf by winning the Australian Open last year, failed to defend but finished runner-up. Hats off to him for that. After the phenomenal year he had, he still went back to support the Australian Open. says a lot about his character and appreciation for the tenets of the game. It's so refreshing to see a young man do the right things time after time. Carlos, I know I'm supposed to stay neutral and only root for the great stories, but I'm becoming a huge Jordan Spieth fan. He's the best story in golf right now. Journeyman Rod Pampling pops up every now and again. He popped up again on Sunday, firing a 10-under par 61 and finishing in fourth spot to gain entry into the 2016 Open Championship. Yep, we're talking 2016 majors already, Carlos. That is a very big deal for him. Amazing what one fantastic round of golf can do. Some other notes out of the Australian Open. Adam Scott fired a 6-under par 65 on Sunday to finish tied with Spieth, four runner-up. He had his old buddy Stevie Williams on the bag. Williams will once again carry part-time for Scott in 2016. Former U.S. Open champion Jeff Ogilvie made his first cut in his last six starts last weekend at the Aussie Open. He still could not make a putt. He had not made a cut since the Open Championship in July. Never fear, he said, it's not as bad as it looks. He played sparingly, spending time in Australia with his family, but he's been striking the ball very well, just not holding enough putts. As always, good stuff last week from Down Under. Always enjoy seeing of Australia and the great golf courses down there, Carlos.
He's awesome, and I have to second that about Jordan Spieth. And I don't know if you saw today the news conference from Tiger Woods and his Hero Challenge World Cup there, and he was talking about himself and his conditions. Did you get to catch anything afterwards? Or
I did. I pulled it up and watched the tape on it. Yes, I did.
Just talking now, it's just about Jordan Spieth, who is the up-and-coming now star. I think he's a worthy heir to Tiger Woods. After watching it, it's really, really sad to see him just like that. It's like maybe he's resigning himself, like saying, hey, I don't think I'm going to do it this anymore. So I don't know, Fred. I get the feeling that he's not just going to come back. And if he comes back, he's just not going to be the same anymore.
Well, he's definitely very frustrated. I have some notes. I was going to talk about them and when we get to the final putts.
Perfect.
But, yeah,
perfect.
He's really frustrated. He made the comment, everything beyond this is gravy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he's resigned himself to the fact he's had a good career, 14 major titles, you know, number one in total wins past Jack Nicklaus for that. Well, I guess he's still behind Sam Snead, one or two.
Sam Snead, yeah.
He just had a great career, 20 years, and the body's just breaking down on him. And you could just tell. He said, you know, right now all I can do is walk. He can't do anything. He can't even play with the kids. He's really frustrated.
Yeah, hopefully he can get back at least at some kind of play. But anyway, that wraps up our weekend backspin. And like Fred said, he's going to have some more notes about it during the final pod. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. So don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And we're going to have the tee shot, as usual, with Fred Alvader. Fred, you're going to talk to us about a subject that is getting very touchy lately, and that's slow play. What's going on there on the European Tour?
Well, you know, Carlos, the R&A is always right on top of every issue. And the slow play thing's only been going around for about 15 years. So they're finally getting around to hosting a symposium on it. That'll do it. Symposiums, that always takes care of everything, that and committees. They hosted a two-day conference on this problem. Little-known story that did come out of it, I found interesting, is that, you know, Sergio Garcia and Jordan Spieth were put on the clock at the ninth hole in the final round of the Open Championship this last year, and Spieth promptly ripped off three consecutive birdies and thanked the referee for giving him the kick he needed to get going. That may have been a slight tongue-in-cheek remark, but it does demonstrate that we don't have to play so deliberately on the golf course. Be respectful of others, you know, that want to keep up the tempo of their game. Just keep moving. You know, check out your shot, distance, line, etc. as you approach. Be ready to pull a club and hit. Speed up a little in your routine. Get moving. It sounds so simple. Pros that are playing for their livelihood as well as their family's well-being want to make sure they consider every facet of a shot before they pull the trigger. Which way the wind's blowing? How strong is it? What's going to happen? Where's the trouble? Da-da-da-da-da. And in some cases, they delay because they are afraid to even hit the shot in the first place. One fateful shot can mean the difference between a missed cut that week and a succession of misses that will lead to sponsors falling away, and that is much worse than a couple of missed cuts. The stakes in professional golf are huge, but not so much for the average golfer. As we all know, the phrase, monkey see, monkey do, that $2 bet is not going to break the bank. Hit the ball and get going. Keith Pelley, the new chief of, Martin Slumbers, the new chief of the RNA, wants to out slow players, make penalties and slow play public, actually name names. Tim Finchman, the players on PGA Tour, would never go for this in the first place. It might get a few tardy players on the PGA moving, but I doubt it. The money that's at stake on the PGA Tour is astronomical, and deliberate players will still play slowly. One remedy, increase fines. Again, in the pro game, that has little consequence. The prize money endorsement deals are simply too large to worry about a few measly fines. If you remember, a couple of years ago, Morgan Pressel was put on the clock at the U.S. Women's Open when she was in contention and in the final group. She finished poorly and didn't win. Fining or public shaming will not do it. Penalty strokes assessed progressively would get the players' attention. You think they hate to find their ball in the divot in a fairway? Buried lies in a bunker and double bogeys, they hate penalty strokes the most, and especially unforced penalty strokes. That would speed up play for sure. If you start throwing out penalty strokes, that's going to get their attention. Just keep moving, Carlos. An 18-hole round of golf does not need to take 5 hours.
Yes, please move along. Anyway, hey, I have to talk about, you know, there were some rumors that spread like fire over this weekend. And yesterday, the USGA, they confirmed that Diana Hershey has been nominated to a one-year term as president of the U.S. Golf Association. If elected, she would be only the second woman to be president of the USGA. Judy Bell was president in 1996-1997, who followed Murphy's husband, Rick Murphy, who was the USGA president in 1994 and 1995. Murphy, who was in her fifth year on the USGA's executive committee and second as vice president, would take over for Thomas K. O'Toole Jr. As for her golf expertise, we can talk that Murphy's involvement with the USGA, it dates back to January of 1994 when her husband, Greg, when he was elected president of the organization. She became a member of the organization's membership committee in 1996. From there, she became a member of the executive committee back in 2011 and went on to chair the commercial compensation, finance, and U.S. senior amateur championship committees. She has also served as treasurer when she was elected as such in 2013. Murphy, she's a 59-year-old. She resides in Simmons Island in Georgia, and she's a managing director of Rock Solid Holdings, which is a private equity firm for small business and real estate in the Southeast. She's also heavily involved in the community, serving on the board of the Boys and Girls Club of Southeast Georgia for now about nearly 10 years. She's also been a member of the College of Coastal Georgia's executive committee and helped guide the school during its transition from a two-year to a four-year school. Fred, this would be great news to see if Diana Murphy becomes the second woman to be president of USGA. She has definitely the golf expertise. She's ready for it. This election will be on February 6th in San Diego as the USGA's annual meeting. We'll be all over it, covering it for you, so stay tuned. More to come.
Yeah, good stuff. You know, with Susie Whaley working up the chairs in the PGA, then Diana Murphy in the USGA. Maybe somebody will get some sense running the golf in the world. We get some women in charge, maybe, huh? Hey, yeah. I know you get tired of hearing me rant about the start of the PGA Tour every year when the clerk, when the calendar turns to January. You know, the PGA Tour starts out with a rather than a bang, that's for sure. But you know what? The Hyundai Tournament Champions may actually have a pretty strong field this year. Since Tiger Woods quit going in 2005 and Phil Mickelson blew it off way before that, the Hyundai Tournament of Champions has become insignificant over the last few years. But times are a-changing, Carlos. Jordan Spieth, runner-up in the Australian Open, and a strong finish at the Hero World Challenge would assure that he would be the first number one player in the field at Kapalua since Vijay Singh in 2005. That's I think that's about 11 years ago. Jason Day and Zach Johnson would give the field all four major champions for the first time since 2010. Throw in Players Champion Ricky Fowler, 2015 WGC Cadillac Champ Dustin Johnson, and then for good measure you got Bubba, Jim Furyk, Patrick Reed, Kevin Kisner, and Brooks Koepka, and this year's Tournament Champions will actually feel like one. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry have sent their regrets, but it's difficult for European Tour guys that play in the Race to Dubai Final Series, you know, and then try to start their year in the Middle East. You know, it's a long flight from Hawaii, even in a private jet to the Middle East, Carlos. Justin Rose has not committed or denied that he's going to attend yet. If he does, the world ranking points for the winner might be pushing 54, which, combined with the Hero World Challenge and the points at the limited field WGCs, gives a top player a huge leg up on the rest of the average professionals. 54 points for the Hyundai Tournament Champions would be the most since Woods used to play, and those ranking points are especially valuable to 216 for Europeans trying to qualify for the Ryder Cup. Ryder Cup's coming, Carlos. Ryder Cup, as they take five players from a list based on world ranking points accrued and for those trying to qualify for the Rio Olympics, Carlos. A lot of good stuff, so big points at the Tournament Champions.
Hey, last week, the LPGA, and we talked about this, about the UL International Crown, but last week, the LPGA confirmed that there's a new site for next year's UL International Crown. It will be played July 21st to the 24th at the Merritt Club in Libertyville, which is a highly regarded private club in Gurnee that has hosted the 2000 U.S. Women's Open and counts Michael Jordan as a member. It's a suburban Chicago venue. It was founded and opened by Bert Gertz in 1992. It has been ranked among the top 100 golf courses in the United States by both Golf Week and Golf Magazine, although it hasn't been the site of a significant competition since it hosted that U.S. Women's Open in 2000, a major event that was won by Kerry Webb. Several other clubs were mentioned to be under consideration before the LPGA finally decided on Merritt Club, which will now take over as the host of the International Crown after the LPGA and Rich Harvest Farms broke their deal to hold the second staging of the biennial competition there. The club, the international team match play event that brings together the top four players from eight qualifying countries for a team competition that was first held in 2014 at Caves Valley in the Washington, D.C. area, Spain, as you might remember, won that event. So now they just have 8 months to get ready. Next to July's team event, which will start with two pro-ams before the team battle begins, launches a three-year run of big-time women's golf in the Chicago area. The PGA of America has announced that its KPMG Women's PGA Championship will be played in Olympia Fields in 2017 and Kemper Lakes in 2018. And speaking of women's golf, why not talk about the top female player in the world? That's Lydia Ko, who's right now resting up after claiming the season-long LPGA points race and a $1 million bonus at the Player of the Year award and leading money winner on the top of her first major win at the Evian Championship. She's very keen to defend her New Zealand Open title in February, which would be in a run towards the LPGA-sanctioned Australian Open in Adelaide. Cole, who won the New Zealand Open this year at Clearwater near Christchurch, and her coach, David Ledbetter, think she's set to defend her title, but it's just now a question of whether Cole and her coaching team think that the schedule will suit her plans. Those plans will revolve around her main goal, which is next year's Rio Olympics. Fred, those plans are not set in stone, but it's nice to see this young Kiwis in a golf sensation wanting to show off her game to repay the loyal supporters back home. And one thing that I find interesting is that both number one players in the world right now, female and male, young as they might be, they're thinking highly of the Rio Olympics.
Yeah, they're young and still a little idealistic, and the world hasn't kind of beat them up yet, so they're like that kind of stuff. So good for them. I think it's great. This year is definitely going to go down as the year that the young people took over in golf, the big switch. Curious, Carlos, we're getting ready for the December 15th show when we're going to list the top 10 or 12 best stories from the year in golf, and the ones that I have gotten back so far, my list, and Mike May sent me his, both we list the youth movement and the Jordan Spieth, as a number one item. I found that curious. But hey, Carlos, think you got problems? Think again. The Golf Coaches Association of America awards David Toms Overcoming Adversity Award to a one-armed, brain-damaged golfer. From the column, if you think you got problems, you don't. The award went to Ryan Korengel, who plays golf one-handed, is visually impaired, struggles with balance, even before the golf cart girl gets by there. He still maintains a 4.0 college acume and is a member of his college golf team. His scores reach into the triple digits, but he still's out there beating it around. Korengel suffered severe brain trauma in September of 2008 when he was just 12 years old. He was caught in a severe storm while playing golf and was struck in the head by a falling tree limb. Carlos, I have a dear friend that was severely injured when a tree limb fell on him. Same situation. Just a freak storm came up real quick. They were on the golf course. He was in a business game. And the tree limb fell on him, required back surgery. He has never ventured on a golf course since. He was in the hospital for 50-some days after that. Took multiple surgeries and years of a rehabilitation to fix young Korengel. He's paralyzed on his left side of his body, and his peripheral vision is limited, so he can only see center to right from both eyes. Korengel, unlike my friend, found his way back to the course and hopes to one day become a motivational speaker to inspire others dealing with difficulty in their lives. I'm thinking that he was going to be a pretty good motivational speaker. I'm motivated just from reading his story. When you're sitting at your desk tomorrow bemoaning little problems that are affecting your life, stop for just a second, think about the trials this young man faces every day, then put a smile on your face and be thankful for your family, friends, job, and your help. Then grab your golf clubs and go make some bogeys. That's exactly what this young man does. Hey, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on products through their director's program. They provide instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out their products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And that wraps up our Power 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, we have our PIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Richard Todd. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. This week, we have Richard Todd. The USGA and the RNA have announced four major rule changes that will go into effect in January 1st of 2016. Richard Todd is a golf rules expert who has written numerous books on explaining golf rules by using humorous situations you may have encountered on the course or watching others make rules mistakes. Richard will explain these new rules and how they affect average golfers in this interview that Fred had with him. So, Fred, tell us a little bit more about the interview.
Yeah, Richard, as you know, is a contributor to NWO Golf Links magazine. He's our golf rules expert, and we go to him whenever we have questions, and I thought this would be a great time to get him in to talk about the four major rule changes that are coming here in January. Everybody talks about the ban on the anchored putter, but there's three other pretty important rule changes that are coming into effect that people ought to be aware of. So go ahead, Carlos.
Let's play it.
We're happy to be talking with Richard Todd, the golf rules guy. He has written a couple of books. He writes columns about the golf rules. He's a certified golf referee. He gets involved in tournaments and helps with rulings, and he is the expert. Does some speaking, and Richard, glad to have you on the show tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Fred.
You know, Richard, I've known him for a while now, and he contributes some articles to our NWO Golf Links magazine. I always enjoy reading those. And one of his books that takes unique short stories and applies them to rules violations, and it also kind of gives a humorous touch. So those are always interesting to read, and I urge you to maybe try and catch those in NWO Golf Links. And give us the titles of a couple of the books that we may want to look for also, Richard.
Oh, absolutely. So as you mentioned, we've got The Golf Rules, Learn the Rules of Golf by Watching Others Break Them. That's on Stroke Play. Of course, once you learn the rules, the nice follow-up book is The Golf Rules Etiquette. Enhance Your Golf Etiquette by Watching Others' Mistakes. And you mentioned both of those are humorous stories. You know, the storytelling has been the foundation for passing along information for eons. And I took that approach for these two books to teach the extremely difficult to understand rules of golf. And when you explain a specific rule, showing an example of what your partner did wrong, you kind of learn it and pick it up forever. And a few other great books, if you're looking for a gift for somebody, we've got Short Stories from the Long Links, which is a collection of golf-related tales, some of which were told to me at author events and book signings, because it's amazing. Every golfer has a golf story. Let me rephrase that. Even non-golfers have golf stories, and everybody loves to tell them. We also have the Golf Course Journal, which is a logbook for your rounds of golf, a little less of the technical side. It does have spots for scorecards, but more importantly, who you played with, memories from the round, where you played, other items like that. And a real hot item right now is the Golf Course Coloring Book, a relaxing golf-inspired coloring book for adults, which you may have seen popular at a lot of the bookstores.
Yeah, I did see that. Looks pretty cool. Hey, while we have you here tonight, we want to talk about there's some rule changes that are going to be going into effect for golf when January rolls around of 2016. And, of course, one of them that pretty much everybody's aware of is the anchored stroke with the long putter, the belly putter, all that kind of thing. So let's start off talking about that just a little bit. How's that going to affect golf going forward here?
Well, it's funny. You mentioned this has been on golfers' lips for several years, although it doesn't seem to be a real big deal when you get down to it. Part of the rules of golf is that you're supposed to make a free swing, and that's the basis for the anchoring rule. The long putter itself can still be used, and I don't know many people who use a long putter other than a couple on the tour, but the basis is when you're using the putter, you can't attach part of it to your body. As you've seen, a lot of people, they would take the top of the putter, the butt end, and press it right up against their chest or their chin, thus making more of a pendulum so that only one part of the club will swing. You can still use the long putter. You just can't directly or indirectly anchor that putter to a part of your body. Hopefully that makes that part clear.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was aware of that. There are also some other rule changes that are going to go into effect next year. Ball moving after a dress. Another big thing that just drives me nuts is people sitting home on their couches calling in and getting a golfer DQ'd or additional strokes added after his round is complete. I believe some rule changes about that.
Absolutely, and you're probably referring to Whistling Straits, the more recent, what do they call it, bunker gate, you know, where you finish a round of golf with a great score and, you know, you're getting into the tent and, you know, you're ready to accept your winnings, and some guy sitting on his couch in Wisconsin calls in and says, hey, back on number three, that was a bunker and he should have a two-stroke penalty. And the rule was, well, you turned in a score that wasn't accurate, so you were disqualified. This is one of those great rules where the USGA realized technology and what really happens and says it really wasn't fair to disqualify somebody for a rule they didn't know they broke. So the new rule starting January 1st is a two-stroke penalty if you have an error that you didn't know. So in that case, as opposed to the big disqualification and the hundreds of thousands of dollars lost, you would adjust your scorecard and with the penalty, two strokes, which I think is extremely fair.
Yeah, one of those things, you know, with Tiger a couple of years ago on number 15 at the Masters, you know, did he drop his ball in proximity to, you know, where it was supposed to after he hit the, you know, spun the other ball back off the green back into the water. And those kind of things just have driven me crazy.
That is tough.
Yeah, so there's something about artificial devices also. You know, is that like range finders and these kind of things? Or what are we talking about with that?
It is. Most of us are familiar with range finders. And as technology increases, our quote-unquote range finders do a lot more than just tell us distance. Some of these will, you know, give slope on a putting green, which, of course, would be very advantageous for anybody, tell you wind speed so you know how to play your shot. The rule was if you have an item like that that will give you information beyond distance measuring, it was a penalty. Whether you use that feature or not, the new rule is you can have a device with these extra features as long as you don't use them.
Yeah, as long as you don't use them. That's the kicker, isn't it?
Well, I would, yeah. And as golfers, we generally are honest people. So hopefully we would be faithful to the rule there, which is usually a local rule to start with.
What about what was the ball moving after address? What's the situation with that?
You know, that's another great issue where the USGA has made the game easier to understand. Prior to 2012, if a ball moved while it was being addressed, basically it was deemed that you made it move, although it could have been the wind, mild earthquake or the ground shifting, gravity, all of those things. So it was very difficult to really assess what made the ball move. Now the rule's been simplified. It just specifically says, did the player cause the ball to move? If not, no penalty. If so, one stroke. So it's much easier to understand. And for those that have picked up the USGA rulebook and tried to read it, it is difficult to understand by design. And there's nothing wrong with that, because there are millions of dollars on the line every week based on that rulebook.
We have been talking with Richard Todd, author of a couple of books on the golf rules and golf etiquette. He also is a contributing writer for NWO Golf Links. And, Richard, thanks again so much for coming on and talking to us. And we are going to be looking for the rule changes effective January 1, and hopefully everyone will abide by those and enjoy the game a little bit more.
Exactly. Thanks for having me on.
There you have it. That was Richard Todd. Fred, excellent insight there. And the way that he explained it, so great, so easy for everybody to understand it. I mean, awesome stuff there with the new rules.
Yeah, he tends to put a humorous spin on stuff. He has some great stories of things he's witnessed over the years and applying the rules to those. So would urge anybody to go out and look for his books. They're on Amazon. Richard Todd, you can find him, T-O-D-D. But the four main areas there are the anchored stroke, which pretty much we've talked to death about that the last 2 years. Post-round rules violations where they're called in. There's going to be a limit of two strokes on those rather than a DQ. Ball movement, this is due to wind on the greens. A lot of time where a guy goes up to putt and the ball's moving around, he gets a two-shot penalty or something. That's not going to happen anymore. He gets to put it back where it was. And then the use of range finders and those things on the course, as long as you're not using them for the other stuff, if you're just getting a distance to the pin, that's okay for most local rules. Not in USG tournament play, of course, but for your local course in your fun round. So there you go.
Hey, before we go now to the Chip Shot, we have to remind you, at the beginning of the show, Fred announced that at the Back Nine Report here, we are very, very excited because we are finally announcing our fantastic winter golf giveaway for December. Back Nine Report has partnered with Let's Golf Travel to offer one of our lucky listeners a winter golf getaway to Gulf Shores, Alabama. This trip is for your favorite foursome and includes 3 days, 2 nights in a beachfront condo provided by Kaiser Realty, which is a Wyndham resort. Plus, we throw in 3x18-hole rounds of golf at the Kraft Farms and Peninsula Golf and Racquet Club. White sandy beaches, 54 holes of golf, and warm, sunny Gulf Shores, Alabama. Fred, what could be better? Simply visit www.letsgolf.com and sign there for the newsletter. You're going to get right there. Don't delay. Just do it right now. But now it's time for our Chip Shot. This week we're going to have Greg Liberto. He's a mental coach that in 2012, along with Patrick J. Gorman, he worked in conjunction with Dr. Jonathan Rich to create a mental game assessment for golfers. Since then, they have assessed over 500 golfers, and they ask you to take that assessment if you are serious and want to learn about how to transform your game and play your best golf ever. Fred, what do we have in the Chip Shot by Craig Liberto this week?
Greg's going to outline kind of a start of one of his programs in something. It's a tip for golfers to follow. We've talked a little bit on the phone. I got to know Greg a little bit over the last few months, and I think he has some pretty good programs. We're going to be hearing more and more from him as we go along. He's also going to be a contributor to NW Golf Links. He has a nice article coming up in the December issue that will come out December the 9th. So Greg, you know, has a good handle on what it takes to get your mind right. And Carlos, as we both know, once you can hit the ball a little bit and you become kind of a proficient golfer, the real next hurdle is freeing your mind so that you can play your best golf, because the mind really holds people back on the golf course, and some players never can get out of their own way, as they say. So, yeah, go ahead.
Let's play.
Hi, it's Greg Liberto, the head coach from MyMentalGameCoach.com, and today we're talking about playing golf 100% ready on every shot. And the core of what I teach my students is that exact concept of being 100% ready when you start every round, feeling 100% ready or in the zone, standing over the golf ball, and then at the end of every round, focusing on the positives to complete that entire positivity loop. But let's just get started with the concept of starting a round of golf feeling 100% ready. As you know, most golfers focus on their score at the start of the round, or maybe they're thinking about how poorly they hit it at the range and how it's going to impact their round today. What you want to have starting every round is what I call a mental game strategy, or a plan that is going to have you feeling calm, confident, and focused from the first shot to the last. And the concept of a mental game strategy is completely different than what a lot of people think of as a tactical course management strategy. What this is just a high-level thought process that's going to allow you to focus on what is the most important today. And the best way to understand what a mental game strategy should be for any given round of golf is to first ask yourself the question, how do I feel today? Golf is a very emotional game, and you need to understand how your emotions are going to impact how you play. So, for example, if you're going into a round of golf and you're feeling, let's just say, less than confident, what you need to do is figure out what's going to make you feel great. What's going to have you feeling 100% ready standing over the golf ball, and what is going to basically reverse that exact feeling of feeling maybe a little self-doubt or uncertainty going into your round. So some of the things that come to mind are maybe just how can I be more confident, or what do I need to do to play my best today? So as you start to ask yourself, how do I feel, and you understand that maybe you feel uncertain, then you start to ask yourself, okay, so the next question is, what do I need to do to feel great, or what do I need to do to play my best? Now, again, this could be different for everybody based on the type of event that they're playing in that day, or maybe where they're playing, or who they're playing against. So there's all these factors that come into play, but a very simple mental game strategy that you could use when you're feeling that uncertainty or self-doubt is just very simply total confidence. Okay? So from the first shot to the last, you want to just remind yourself that that is your strategy. So every time that you're feeling those ants or automatic negative thoughts, you want to stop, physically stop moving, and just say to yourself out loud, total confidence, total confidence, total confidence. You can only have one thought at a time. So what you need to do is stop that negative thought pattern and then reverse it and get focused on what is most important for you today. And if you think about the concept of playing with a mental game strategy, it's almost as if you're taking your coach with you to the course, because that's exactly what you're doing, is you're self-coaching by asking yourself that question, what do I need to do to play my best today and have the most fun? You become your own coach. So again, in order for you to start every round feeling 100% ready and to feel 100% ready from the first shot to the last, always play golf with the mental game strategy. Until next time, it's Greg Liberto, the head coach, helping you play your best golf ever.
Another excellent insight from a new contributor here. I believe that the players or listeners are going to get a lot of good insight from that mental game. We all know that there's been a saying that from 70 to even 90% of the sport is mental. So, hey, this is a great, great insight that he's giving us here, Fred.
Yeah, a couple things you said in there. Too many thoughts in your head. You know, when you talk to players or after the round that have had a fantastic round, you know, shot the course record or whatever, and you say, well, what were you thinking about there? And they just look at you and say, you know what? I really wasn't thinking about anything. I just saw the shot and I swung the club. And that's what he's talking about getting to, Carlos. Quit thinking about 15 things at once, you know. Is this the right club? What's the distance? Is it going to bounce this way? You know, what if I hit it in the water? Da-da-da. You can't think about it. You just see the shot, swing the club. That's when you play your best golf, and that's what he's trying to get to. So if you go to his website, mymentalgamecoach.com, he's also written a book, 18 Holes, 18 Game-Changing Tips to Play Your Best Golf Ever. He also does audio coaching, and you can get a hold of him. If you want more information, you can get it there. So mymentalgamecoach.com, Carlos.
That wraps up our chip shot. Now we're going to take one more short break. When we come back, we're going to have the practice range on our file pots. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us will take a shot at it. But this week, we're going to have a different kind of take at it, because I'm going to give our coach, our insider, our teacher here, Fred Alvader, some situations that I want him to correct me. And if I'm wrong, I don't know. He will tell me. So I'll give him my take. He'll give me his. And, of course, his will be right. So, anyway, Fred. We're going to talk about some golf tips that you have for beginners. So let me tell you what the first one that I find. I believe, you know, that I need to be able to gain distance. I try to turn more on my backswing, but I am not getting any more distance at it. Am I doing it wrong, or what's wrong with it? Because I'm trying to turn more on my back in the swing, and it's not doing anything.
Well, Carlos, you're kind of on the right path, trying to make a bigger or more aggressive turn. But a couple of things here. The most common fault is that rather than turning around a central axis, the high handicapper tends to slide back off the ball, and by doing that, fails to get back into the correct position to hit the ball. So when you slide or you move laterally to your right, if you're right-handed and in your backswing, so you move to your right, when you slide behind the ball, you effectively change the position of the ball at the bottom of your swing, which results in an early release, which produces those dreaded worm burners and fatty patties and, you know, all those bad shots result from that. So here's a couple things to try. When practicing, keep your feet on the floor. You can do this at home, and concentrate on turning only your shoulders. The drill here is to lay a golf club or a broom handle or something across your chest, across your shoulders. Take that broom handle or that club and turn your shoulders only so that it points down at the ball. If you could point it past the ball, that's really good. That shows good flexibility. But if you can just kind of keep your lower body static. Flex your knees a little bit, but don't let your hips slide. Let them turn like you're in a barrel. So if you can get that turn where you get your left shoulder underneath your chin, that will create the width for you. Now, this will create a tension. You'll feel a pulling or a burning of the muscles in your latissimus, which I believe is your side of your torso. It'd be on your left-hand side if you're a right-hand golfer, as you get to the top of your backswing. And at that time, your left shoulder wants to end up directly underneath your chin or even a little bit to the right of your chin. The next time you watch professionals on television, notice their shoulder turn and the width they achieve simply by turning their upper torso. If your shoulders turn correctly, Carlos, and you do not slide, you will achieve a much more consistent swing path that results in a tremendous amount of improved consistency.
Perfect. Got it. Let me give you a second one. I've been told, the secret of good putting, is to make sure that your mind can accurately visualize that line between the hole and the ball there at the green. I start to analyze that potential trajectory. I start at the hole and go backwards to the ball stands. Is that right, or am I doing it wrong?
Yeah, you're kind of on the right track. There's a little bit more to it than that. This answer is kind of a twofold thing to me. To read greens correctly, you need to start doing it really from 100 to 150 yards from the green. This is really where it's really better to be walking the golf course than riding a cart, because you go out, hit your shot, you walk back over to the cart, you ride the cart path up, and you're not even looking at the green. You're drinking your beer and shooting the breeze and all that good stuff. It speeds up play, but you're not really focused on what you're doing. The best time to start reading a green is as you're walking up to it from 100 yards out. You want to take notice of the overall terrain. You want to identify the path that the water must flow off the green. Where has the designer sloped the green to allow water to escape? Find the drain, the pond, or the stream that indicates where that water, where the lowest part of the green will be. Once the low area is identified, find the highest point. Then how severe is that slope? These factors will give you the feel for the arc of the putt or how much break you're going to need to play. Now, the second part of good putting is having the correct speed on the greens. And speed should have been decided on the putting green before your round began, or at least on the first couple of holes, you should have now a good feel for the speed of the greens. Good golfers hate it when the greens on the golf course stump at a different speed than the practice greens. I've had that several times. It just drives people nuts. It drives me nuts. And there are thousands of theories about putting. I try to keep it simple. But, Carlos, if you read the terrain, understand where the low point is, where the water flows off, understand where the high point is, get the arc, and you have the speed, that's going to help you tremendously. Now, let's talk about one more piece here before we get away from putting, and that is keeping the putter face square so that you actually get the ball going on the line that you see. I see so many people try to putt, and the first move is they cock their wrist and slap it just with their wrist. Totally wrong. If you watch really good putters, their hands do not move. Their hands, arms, and shoulders are all connected. It's all one triangle, and that just all rocks or moves like a pendulum on a grandfather clock. So we want to take the hands out of the putting stroke, use a pendulum motion with the shoulders, keep a light grip, and always feel like the back of your left. If you're right-handed, would be your right-handed putter. It would be the back of your left hand. If you're a left-handed putter, the back of your right hand is leading the putter on the intended line. Don't let the wrist break, which would allow the putter head to flip or contort. The whole point of putting should be to keep the putter head on a consistent path and as smooth through the hitting area as possible. I want to mention one more thing real quickly while we're on this, Carlos, that I adopted a putting technique this summer that seems to be working quite nicely, actually. It involves dividing the hole into quadrants and finding a funnel to filter your ball into the hole. It's much more complicated than this. I'm trying to make it real simple here to save time. The theory is based from a book by C.J. Decker called Reading Greens, Secrets of the Fall Line. To purchase Mr. Decker's book and more information on this method, visit readinggreens.net. To make it real simple, once you find the fall line, you get an X and Y axis. You divide those quadrants into sections. You find a funnel, and you put your ball into that funnel, and let the funnel take it into the hall. Believe me, it works very well. I was emailing back and forth with him today. We will get him on the show as a guest after the first of the year, and he can tell us more about his putting theories to give our listeners. But I can tell you that it works very well.
Looking forward to that one. Hey, one more before we go to our final putts. I'm going to tell you about the short game, you know, the short game swing. I always try to get that proper stance and use, you know, the power and control of my hands a little bit and the arms a lot. But I've been told that I have restless legs. What are they talking about with that? Is it affecting my game? What's going on with the short game?
Well, not seeing you do this, I'm guessing that you kind of have what I would call happy feet, or you kind of dance around a little bit. And I know many teaching professionals promote a narrow stance for chipping. And if you watch pros on those short little cute little chip shots around the greens, a lot of times they'll have their feet right together. For the average player or the beginning player, Carlos, I disagree with this. That technique works really good for the low handicap or a scratch player who has superior feel for the bottom of his or her swing. Your restless legs come from a lack of confidence and stem from moving off the ball too quickly with your upper body. For the higher handicapper, golfer, or beginner, I want to see a slightly wider stance at address, actually, which will help take the hands out of the chipping stroke. You actually use a similar stroke as you would with a putter. And let's use those shoulders and turn the shoulders and not flip at it with the hands. Let the shoulders take the club down and through the ball. Don't flip at it. Don't slap at it. You know, chipping I see so many times that it's an area that can affect lower scoring, especially for beginning golfers, just right away. Plus, if you learn to chip and hit short irons correctly, that mini stroke carries over into the full swing, and you will begin to hit more precise shots with better contact on the face of the club. Again, this whole process is actually tied into learning to correctly use the shoulders in the golf swing and carrying that single motion through to every shot, Carlos.
Thank you for all those great tips. Thank God this show is taped. You know, you can go back. Listen to it. It's a lot of great information there. But, hey, we emphasize on going back to the basics, and that's why we brought you these tips. Hopefully it will help your game as much as I hope it helps mine. We'll let you know if it does. So, anyway, let's go now to the final putts. I'm going to start right away talking a little bit about the relations between Ryanwood Group, which was the club of Wentworth Club last year for over 135 pounds. Million pounds, and its membership that have sunk to an all-time low after a growing escalation in tensions saw Wentworth Chinese owners being accused of a lack of respect after the St. George flag was lowered to half-mast for victims of the Paris atrocity, while the Chinese flag that also now stands outside the clubhouse was not. Now the angry golfers have called in Philip Hammond, who is their foreign secretary, who has waded into the row between them, branding the actions of the Chinese owners of Wentworth Club as very disappointed in a pledge to help the golfers. His intervention will boost the hopes of those golfers that can really succeed in forcing the new owners to backtrack in the plans for massive hikes in fees and a drastic cut of members. But Hammond, who is Wentworth's local MP, will need to use every inch of diplomatic skills acquired during his tenure as foreign secretary. So we'll see what happens there. Another one that I have is, you know, there are winds of change blowing in the European Tour with executive Kit Fairley announcing at the Race to Dubai finale a couple of major changes in their membership policy and the new 2016 schedule, including new look of the final series, and has also declared war on slow play. You know, he has also acknowledged that the European Tour needs to become a viable alternative to the PGA Tour. Will have to up their game so that the players play more events on that side of the Atlantic. So if you want to know more about the European Tour's new CEO, Kit Fairley, you know, John Hopkins did a very interesting in-depth Q&A piece in this week's Global Golf Post where he threw everything but the kitchen sink at Pelly and he answered it. So if you want to get more insight of it, there's a very entertaining and insightful interview there. We recommend it to you to read it in the Global Golf Post. And finally, Fred, speaking of the European Tour, it ends the tournament's calendar year with events in both South Africa and Australia this week with the Elite Field Netband Challenge, where Charles Schwartzel, who entered there substituting Ernie Els, will try to see if he can win for the second time right now in as many weeks. It's going to be played in Sun City. He definitely is in form and would be maybe the favorite to win. And the Australia PGA Championship, which is jointly sanctioned with the European Tour for the very first occasion on the Gold Coast of Queensland there in Australia, where another in-form player, and that's Adam Scott, will be looking to win again there. He's really in form and should be the favorite to win.
Hey, Carlos, just a couple real quick things here. I want to mention one more time before we get off tonight that our winter golf getaway contest. Trip is for your favorite foursome. Includes 3 days, 2 nights in a beachfront condo provided by Kaiser Realty, a Wyndham Resort. Plus, we're going to throw in 3 18-hole rounds of golf, 2 at Kraft Farms and 1 at Peninsula Golf and Racquet Club. You've got white sandy beaches, 54 holes of golf, and warm, sunny Gulf Shores, Alabama weather. Gulf Shores is one of my favorite places. Carlos, a couple things real quick. Jared Lyle, who has been battling leukemia, you know, for several years, has survived 2 bouts with it to return to the PGA Tour, was awarded the PGA Tour Courage Award this week. The Tour moves over, well, not the Tour, but 18 of the biggest names in golf move over to the Hero World Challenge this week, hosted by Tiger Woods. It's going to be held in Albany in the Bahamas. As you mentioned earlier, Tiger had a press conference there today. He just was really not good body language on this. He looks very dejected, very frustrated. No timetable for his return. He mentioned that he can't even play soccer or ball with his kids. He just has no mobility. And he doesn't, you know, he just can't play. He can't even start his rehab. So he said that, you know, if he's not able to play anymore, he's had a good career. Everything beyond this is gravy. Albany, named for a historic pink Bahamian colonial mansion called Albany House, a beautiful area down there. It hosted the James Bond movie Casino Royale, if you remember that. TV times, 1 to 4 p.m. Thursday and Friday on Golf Channel. Starts on Golf Channel 12 to 2:30 on Saturday, and 12 to 2 Sunday on the Golf. I'm sorry, 2:30 to 5 on Saturday, then on NBC. 12 to 2 on Sunday on the Golf Channel, and then 2 to 5 on NBC for the final round on Sunday. A lot of big names there. Should be fun to watch. And the LPGA Tour Q School starts final stage tomorrow, actually. There's 157 young women in the field competing for 20 full status LPGA Tour membership cards this week. They're in Daytona, Florida. The players who finish 21 through 45 will earn conditional membership. They play 5 rounds. They end on Sunday. The field is cut down to the top 70 for Sunday. To give you an idea of the major difference, Allison Lee and Minji Lee, who shared medalist honors last year, played in 23 and 29 LPGA events respectively this year, while Julie Yang, who finished T21, only got to make 12 starts on the LPGA. And it's going to be worse next year because of the Rio Olympics and the way it messes up the whole schedule. So conditional status tour members next year are going to get very limited starts. They're going to be lucky to get 8 to 10 starts. Seven players in the field this week are currently in the top 60 in the International Golf Federation rankings to represent their country in the Rio Olympics in August. And we want to wish good luck to our friends of Backdown Report, Carolyn Powers and Holly Clybourne, who are both in the field trying for their LPGA Tour cards this week. Finally, did you see the golf.com listed the top golfer from every state through history? I don't know if you can guess who topped the list from Ohio. That's a pretty tough
Fred
one.
Jack.
I was just a close second there, Jack Nicklaus, actually. But Carlos, I was mildly surprised with the pick from Arkansas. They chose Paul Runyon, who was chosen over Bill Bubba Clinton. That really surprised me, Carlos.
No,
that's all I have for tonight.
No. That's so wrong.
I did not make love to that woman.
Oh, my God. Hey, Back Nine, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest in the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VAG very important guest of the week, Richard Todd, for his great insight on the rules of golf, and also to Greg Liberto for his contribution on the chip shot and the mental game. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Mac9Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.